You are now tuning into The Conversation, and I'm your host, Daniel Spaulding, broadcasting off the voice of the Nimiipuu Nation, KIYE 88.7 FM in Kamiai, and on Translator 105.5 FM K288EU in Lapway. Today, I have a special guest on the line or in our virtual studio here, and we'll be discussing Blood Quantum. So let me introduce my next guest here. Derek Red Arrow Frank is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce tribe and works as an attorney with the law firm of Stokes Lawrence in Yakima, Washington. Derek is a co-founder and co-leader of the firm's American Indian Law Practice Group. Derek represents and advises tribal governments, tribal enterprises, nonprofit tribal organizations, and Indian-owned businesses in litigation and commercial disputes involving land-back programs, treaty rights, tribal natural resources, taxation, intertribal trade, jurisdictional disputes, and other matters of federal Indian law. Prior to working with Stokes Lawrence, Derek worked as a staff attorney for the Confederate Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Nation's Office of Legal Counsel, where he represented the Yakima Nation and administrative state and federal courts on issues involving treaty rights, water rights, economic development, hemp regulation, and tribal sovereignty matters. He is a former law clerk to Chief U.S. District Court Judge Brian M. Morris for the District of Montana. Derek graduated from Seattle University School of Law in 2018, where he served as the editor-in-chief of the American Indian Law Journal and was a recipient of the Douglas R. Nash Native American Scholar Award. While in law school, Derek served as a law clerk for the Nez Perce Tribal Office of Legal Counsel, Earth Justice, and Civil Rights Unit of the Washington State Attorney General's Office. Prior to becoming an attorney, Derek owned and operated a small business where he trained athletes for endurance competitions such as ultramarathons, adventure races, and triathlons. Derek enjoys dancing prairie chicken style at powwows throughout the Pacific Northwest with his wife, Bree Blackhorse, and daughter, who are both traditional dancers. So without further ado, KIYE listeners, let me introduce you to Derek. Hello, are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Katsiyoyo.
What's going on? Thanks for your time today. I feel like Blood Quantum is definitely a conversation that, you know, our communities need to have. So I appreciate you for, you know, giving me your time today.
Yeah, and thank you for letting me be here. I really appreciate it. And like you said, the issue of Blood Quantum, it resonates throughout Indian country. Mm-hmm. And just learning more about it, learning about its history, and understanding how it affects us, I think is really important right now.
Yes, definitely. And so just to kind of kick off the interview here, why, you know, I have some questions here. Why is the issue of Blood Quantum important to you?
Yeah, so Blood Quantum, as a Nez Perce tribal member, Blood Quantum affects me as an Indian person. I have the fortunate benefit of being an enrolled member of the Nez Perce tribe, but for my job is in Indian country. So I protect tribes and tribal people, and I help them both understand and think through creative ways to develop themselves economically. And with that, I have to seek out and understand systemic issues in Indian country. One deep-seated issue in Indian country that I always see is tribal membership. And I think it's fair to say that tribal membership hasn't really affected the past generations as it affects our children today. Today, I believe there exists an identity issue with thousands of Indian children who cannot be enrolled because of certain blood quantum standards that each tribe possesses. And without belonging, it becomes easy to become unmotivated, lost, or even disconnected. And really, like I think about it, tribal membership for Indian people is more than mere citizenship in an Indian tribe. It's the base of one's identity or belonging to community, connection to one's heritage, and an affirmation of their human being in the sense and place in the world. Really, it's not an overstatement to say that it is really everything. In fact, it would be an understatement to say anything less. So tribal membership completes the circle for the members' physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of a person's life. So because of this issue, and because it impacts both my tribe and me personally, when an opportunity arose where I could become involved with thinking through this issue on the amendments committee, I of course sought to be a part of that committee.
Yes, I definitely agree with everything you said there. And so for the listeners out there who might not understand what Blood Quantum is, you know, we KIYE is located here in Kamiai, so we also, you know, we're on the Nez Perce Reservation, but we also have a lot of non-natives who tune in. For the listeners out there, could you explain a little bit what is Blood Quantum?
Yeah, and so Blood Quantum laws, or Indian blood laws in the United States, define Indian status by Indian ancestry, or fractions of Indian ancestry. So these laws were enacted by the federal government and state governments as a way to establish legally defined classes and populations of racial. So a person's blood quantum is defined as a fraction of their ancestors, or out of their total ancestors, who are documented as full-blooded Indian. So for instance, a person who has one parent who is full-blooded Indian and someone who has no native ancestry would be considered half an Indian or have half a blood quantum. The easiest way to think about this is like a 4-H animal. So today there are only a few things that are legally defined by blood quantum, such as breed show animals, stock animals, food animals, such as Wagyu beef, dogs, certain cats, horses, and Indian people. Those are the only things that are legally defined in this country by this.
Yeah, that's... That's a lot to take in, because I remember seeing posts about how, you know, animals and natives are the only things that are that use blood quantum, you know. And it's so weird because I have an English bulldog, and so when I got him, I got all his like family tree and ancestry, and it reminded me of like the old BIA family trees that they give out, you know. So I'm like, this is so weird, like my dog, I know his history, and then like knowing my, it's a weird thing. But so with my next question I have is, where did the concept of blood quantum come from?
That is a very dense question, and let me just begin by saying where blood quantum came from. We can talk about this subject all day, but what I'll try to do is summarize where it began and also how it became applied to Indian country and Indian people. So the best way to think about this is the beginning of the American government. So back in the 1700s, the colony of Virginia adopted this thing called the Indian Blood Law. And what this did is it limited the civil rights of Indian people and persons of mixed blood, or one half or more Indian ancestry. If it was determined that you were mixed blood, you would, by these Indian blood laws, you would lose the ability to engage in government, the inability to vote, all the civil rights that we enjoy today. So that's kind of where we've seen where it started. I'm sure there are older histories of it, but that's just a good foundation to start from. But let's fast forward a couple centuries further into 1934. So in Indian country, we had certain eras. We had the allotment era, the treaty era, the termination era, etc. During the allotment era, the government took all of our land, divided it up, separated it, and gave it back to us, so in hopes that we'd become civilized, that we'd become farmers, and use land in how they saw it in a beneficial way. This destroyed our land, and it became a huge issue. And so in 1934, President Franklin D. Roosevelt wanted to fix that. So he passed this thing called the Indian Reorganization Act, saying, hey, we're stopping this allotment process. Any surplus land that has not been sold off to non-Indians will be given back to the tribes. But then there's other Congress people out there that said, whoa, 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 you know, we need these Indian people to become civilized, to become farmers, to become a part of the community. We can't have them roaming around these lands. And so they thought about it, and so they fixed within the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, these things called IRA constitutions, Indian Reorganization Act constitutions. These are boilerplate constitutions drafted by non-Indians that try to mimic the federal constitution. And this act said, hey tribes, we will stop allotment. We will give you all these federal subsidies, helping you out with your community, etc. But in order to obtain these subsidies, in order to obtain all this funding for your people, you have to adopt this constitution. And so a lot of tribes really needed the help. And so they took it on, they reviewed it, they signed it, and it was established. But in Article 3 or Article 4 is where we usually see membership in these constitutions. It defined Indian people using blood quantum, saying that membership must be proven by the applicant to prove that they have a quarter blood. And this has its roots back to the 1700 Indian blood law. And it was the easiest way that the government could define us as people, because they saw us as second-tier citizens at the time. They saw us as savages, uncivilized people, and as animals, like we had mentioned before. And so pairing us with that and showing that, you know, we are being diluted and becoming more civilized, if you will, made sense to them. And so that's where we actually have the blood quantum laws that are at place today that affect you, that affect me, that affect our children and our children's children.
Okay, so the concept of blood quantum, so what you're saying is it did not come from, you know, the Nez Perce tribe or any other tribal nation?
No, No, it did not. In fact, the best way to describe it is that it was a legal term used by early American colonizers to describe human people they viewed and classified as savages and animals. Mm. So again, back to that half-breed stock, that farm animal definition, they saw us as animals running through the woods, completely uncivilized, and we were defined similarly, like those animals. But really, historically, when we look back, tribes determined tribal membership in many different ways, pursuant to their cultural beliefs, etc. But really, I think it all ties down to, we used to define it through kinship ties. This is where, you know, people were married to others for purposes of resources, such as hunting grounds, fishing grounds, horses, tools, and other types of trade. This kinship and belonging to a tribe also helped solve long-lasting conflicts between different tribes and different bands. So really, tribes, there was always a base tribe. There was always a base foundation of that band. But in order to grow, you have Indian babies, and you intermarry between different family lines to create and expand the resources that your tribe can take advantage of. And so that was really, it was all to help grow the tribe in different ways. But unfamiliar, and I have not read, but I am open to understanding whether a tribe truly understood tribal membership to be split in half if one tribal member had a child with another tribal member.
All right, so I know with our tribe, we use blood quantum for, you know, enrollment purposes and stuff, but do other tribes use blood quantum to determine their membership?
Yes, many tribes still use blood quantum to find their membership roles. And really, this is because blood quantum is what was established on paper. It's codified, and it seems to be some type of authority to determine who we are as Indian people. And we've kind of generally accepted it because it's what our living generations have always known. I should note that even some tribes that did not accept these IRA constitutions that oppressed blood quantum into our membership, some tribes still determine their membership by blood quantum voluntarily, like the Yakama Nation, which issued a resolution describing how it views enrollable Indian people, and they used the quarter blood quantum standard. But regardless, blood quantum is maintained because there are issues with amending these IRA constitutions, such as the process to do that and approval of the federal government. And there is typically conflict in tribal membership on how to properly define what a tribal member is. We're all looking for that perfect solution, and trying to find it within this system is extremely difficult.
Right. For my next question, do tribes use other ways of determining membership other than a fourth blood quantum?
Yeah, so there are other tribes that determine membership in different ways. One very popular way is called descendancy, which means that a person must simply show that they have a lineal or direct connection to an originally enrolled Indian person. And so there's two common descent principles. One is parental enrollment, and this is used probably by about 100, 140 tribes, and it requires a person to prove that at least one parent is or was enrolled with the tribe at the time of the applicant's birth. There is lineal descendancy, which is used by probably about 102 tribes. That requires applicants to prove a lineal descent from a person enrolled on a federal roll or roster. Also, other tribes use blood quantum and descendants type policies, which remove certain rights for the more, quote, diluted people, and grant certain rights, like treaty rights, to those who meet certain blood quantum standards. What this does, though, it creates an express and legal class of person, or a type of eugenic type of policy that establishes one person above the other. Mm-hmm. We've seen this in Nazi Germany, which used different types of eugenic type policies, who determined who was in fact Aryan. But there are also tribes who have taken blood quantum, understood it is a made up system that was imposed on Indian people, and have established and changed their membership to say that, all right, we'll accept this. We'll accept blood quantum, but we're going to make it our own. And they've made the then living members at the time of whatever amendment was passed to become full-blooded. And they are now considered a full-blooded Indian, and their children will be diluted pursuant to blood quantum ties. But the problem with this is a temporary fix to the overarching issue. But determining membership should never be a permanent fix, because there really is no such thing, and it should always typically be revisited occasion after occasion to form and evolve with what that tribe believes its membership to be.
Yeah, and that kind of goes into the next question here. So if tribes can, you know, determine their own rules for enrollment, is there a solution or a fix to government-imposed membership criteria like blood quantum?
Always. There's always a happy ending. But there's no perfect solution that can reflect exactly how a tribe accepted members in a traditional sense. If there is a perfect solution, again, I'm all ears. I would love to learn about that. But for now, from what I understand, is we have an issue. And the issue is that many of our children that are immersed in our cultures, who can be leaders, who are the next generation of Indian people that can protect our people, our culture, and our resources, are not considered Indian. This leaves our children without a base. And without a base or foundation in one's identity with that raw sense of belonging, that child will most likely become unmotivated to support, fight for, and will not seek to be involved in the tribe that doesn't consider that person a real member. So in my personal view, I believe honestly that my ancestors would be sad to see us leave our children lost and alone in a world filled with conflict and chaos, seeking a perfect solution or fix to government-imposed membership criteria like blood quantum.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, you know, one thing that I wanted to say, I'll make it clear out there for the listeners, that personally, my own personal opinion, I don't believe that blood quantum should define a person's like identity in their indigenous culture or background. I don't think that blood quantum is like the, what do they say, all be all say all or whatever. I don't think that blood quantum like determines whether you're more native than someone or not. So I did want to mention that. And I do understand that blood quantum is not our way. And it's a colonial construct that, you know, was put in place to eventually, you know, erase us out, I think. But anyway, it's my own personal opinion. But yeah, so that kind of leads up into my, you know, final question here. What is the Nez Perce tribe or its membership currently doing to address issues involving blood quantum?
It's a really good question, Daniel. So the issue of membership has been tossed around our tribe for decades. And I do believe we all know it's an issue, but we disagree on how it can be resolved in a good way. We all seek and want that perfect solution. So the Nez Perce tribe has entertained different proposals for amendments, but each has failed. I believe these efforts have failed only because simply just people are unfamiliar with the language or don't know how it's going to work, haven't had the right conversations about it, or perhaps just completely disagree with the process and think that we should maintain what has already been established. But recently, during the Fall General Council, many people attended that council because they understood blood quantum would be a part of the conversation. And this became apparent when it was brought up a few times. But a motion was made to reignite the amendments committee and to learn more about blood quantum and to begin that conversation again. And we hoped to provide forums for conversation and also just a space to think and consider a proposed amendment to Article 4 of the Nez Perce Tribe's Constitution. And we should be seeing a proposed amendment here next year. What we need to do now is simply we need everybody to kind of be involved. That's including membership, which means that we all need to be a part of this conversation. If you have questions, feel free to reach out. I think that my contact information might be shared. My name is Derek Red Arrow Frank. If you have any questions or even issues with what I've said today, I would love to hear it, because dialogue and conversation is what's going to help solve this issue. I believe that the Amendments Committee will be hosting a couple community meetings to listen to give these types of presentations about the historical facts, the legal facts, etc., and how they interact with our membership. But again, I think just even if you've made it this far listening, thank you for being a part of it. Again, we all see this as an issue, I believe. And even those who don't see it as an issue, please be involved, because we need everybody's thoughts, comments, and considerations to determine the future of our tribe.
Yeah, I think it's definitely important to have these conversations. I know sometimes they can be a little uncomfortable, I think, for some, but I think it's definitely a conversation that's long overdue. I know General Counsel in the fall was on and popping. You know, there was a lot of opinions and a lot of, people speaking up. And so I think it's good that we get to utilize, you know, the radio here, our own tribal platform to talk about this. But for the listeners out there, you know, tribal members, if you are wondering about the Nez Perce Tribe, the Amendments Committee, or if you have any questions or comments or concerns, there is an email address that you can send emails to. So the email address is nptamendments@gmail.com. Again, that's nptamendments@gmail.com. That's a good way to get your questions out, and expect some community meetings, hopefully within the future here when we we get more information on that, can definitely share for the listeners. But again, thank you for your time, and thanks for listening, and any last words?
Just thanks, Daniel, for allowing me to come on to talk about this. Hopefully, if there was any opinions shared, they are my own. They are nobody else's, but other than that, I hope that it was mostly factual and legal in the sense of just how this is, where it came from, how it's imposed, and how it operates within Indian country. And that's the main message that I wanted to portray. But if there are any opinions, again, those are my own opinions. And again, I encourage anyone who wants questions answered or has thoughts, comments, conflicts to reach out to me as well. Derek, D-E-R-E-K dot red arrow, R-E-D-A-R-R-O-W. At Stokes, S-T-O-K-E-S, law, L-A-W, .com.
The thoughts and opinions of this program are of the host and guest only. They do not reflect the Nez Perce Tribe or KIYE Radio.